Thanks for tuning in to our podcast, Leaders, Followers, and everything in between. We love having you here. It is our mission to bring you all of the latest and greatest tips and skills and know-how and how to make your personal life and business life the very best it can be. We know that you have it in you. We believe in you. We just want to show you how.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome my special guest.
I first found out about you at the FITSE conference. By the way, you stole the show, by the way.
Oh, you're very kind.
Out of all the speakers there, you just basically came in and just kind of waltzed in there and stole the show. So tell us a little bit about yourself. I just found out that you are of Caribbean descent, which is amazing.
I am. So first of all, thank you for the compliment. And I think the reason is I was really authentic about what I was saying, right? The message that I was conveying. And so I really appreciate you saying that. But yes, I am of Caribbean descent. I am Jamaican born, lived here since I was 15. So I feel fully American as well.
Yes, yes.
And I think the blend really helps make me who
exactly,
I am.
Exactly. I was telling someone today, the beauty of America is... America is, it's not just like a regular country. It's an idea. It's a concept. It's almost like a belief that you, no matter where you come from, President Trump, his mother was an immigrant, you know, barely spoke the language. And today he's, whether you like him or don't like him, but he's the president of the United States. So, I mean, and he's like first generation immigrant, you know?
Yes.
So that's pretty unique about the United States of America.
Yeah, it's certainly the land of infinite possibilities.
Exactly, exactly. So tell me, did you come from humble beginnings?
So my beginnings were moderate. I wouldn't say humble.
Okay.
But what I did learn from my peers is humility.
I love that because you're authentic. I love that.
Yeah.
It seems to be a theme with you.
Yes, I'm saying my parents always taught humility.
Awesome.
So, you know, even though I did not come from humble beginnings, I believe in being humble and respectful of everyone, no matter what their condition or
what
they are.
That's great. That's great. That's great. And are you the only child or do you have other siblings?
No, my parents had four children, so I'm the oldest of four.
Awesome.
And all of us moved here as a family
when I was in my mid-teens.
Yeah.
I have seven other siblings.
Do you?
Wow. So I always say that my parents had, you know, six average kids and one exceptional one, you know?
And you don't claim who that exceptional one is.
You know. Yes, no, my siblings are all wonderful. They're all wonderful.
Yeah.
You have quite an amazing, amazing career. So how did you start off? I grew up watching comics. And so every comic has what I call a native story, you know, like, you know, Superman or Batman. They all have like a story where they, you know, how they started off, they, like you said, humble beginnings, and then something happened, you know, Spider-Man, a spider bites him, and then all of a sudden he becomes, you know, Spider-Man. So tell me, what's your superhero native story?
So you could say the volunteer itch bit me, but I would have to say it started by me saying yes. Yes to an opportunity that I would say kind of started a trajectory of saying yes. So I always speak about optimizing opportunity, and my first opportunity, when I first started practicing law, I'm a lawyer, I didn't really have a circle of other lawyers or people that I could call upon and kind of ask to help me along. So there was a very young Black women's legal organization that had formed, and they were recruiting members and asked if I would consider joining. And so I said yes. And that, I would have to tell you, was very much the start of feeling a belonging, a start of feeling a sense of community, joining a community to give back to the community, because a large part of what they did was also giving to the community, both in legal advice and donating of our treasures as well.
Wow, that's quite amazing. It seems to me that from the onset there was a career infusion with a calling. You know, would you say that's an appropriate assessment?
I think it is more than appropriate. It is exactly correct. It is right on.
Wow.
So, and I've never thought of saying it that way, but that captures it. Absolutely.
Wow. So, yeah. So what type of law did you begin practicing?
So I practiced complex business litigation, which included legal and medical malpractice and products liability and business commercial litigation. So it was, very complex and very engaging practice, right? Litigation in the courts. And so what I found rounded me out, gave me calm, gave me peace, was to volunteer and give back to community. So as I mentioned at the outset, that first organization got me interested in becoming a member of various other boards and organizations. And through that experience, I then started finding myself in leadership positions within those organizations. And that also kind of helped catapult me into other opportunities. So it's kind of, I would say, almost cyclical, because I'm here today doing something which is very much community-centered, and that is, community relations and government relations.
Wow. And how long have you been practicing law?
So I've been practicing about over 30 years, 32 years.
You don't even look like you've been practicing that long. That is
You are a very gentle spirit. I am most appreciative. Thank you so much. But yes, I have. I have practiced for that long.
Well, and it must be because you're living right, that's for sure, you know?
Yes. Well, I do believe that.
My grandmother used to say that, you know?
Yeah, living right. You're living right. Yes.
So you say volunteer. So what sorts of volunteer organizations and projects have you been engaged with in the community?
So a plethora, a lot of them, and very different. So I've been volunteer in the sense of I've served on several boards. So that's one sense of volunteering my time and talent. And so, I'm the past chair of the Greater Fort Lauderdale Chamber of Commerce, and I'm currently the chair of the Greater Fort Lauderdale Alliance. So those are more civic and
what is that? What is the Greater Fort Lauderdale Alliance for those people that don't live here?
Of course. So that is the Broward County is the county in which I live, and that is their Economic Development Council.
Okay.
So primarily responsible with working with the county to bring business into the county to grow existing businesses, try to relocate headquarters. Currently, we're working on a very exciting project that's very near and dear to my heart, and that is to create jobs in those zip codes or areas where we have a much higher rate of unemployment as compared to the rest of the county.
Okay, wow. So yeah. I like it because one of the biggest tenets of when I do charitable work is I want to be a hand up, not a handout,
yeah.
And adding dignity to the whole charitable side of things, because I'm a big proponent that whenever someone has to strive and go after something, I coach professional athletes in the NBA and the NFL, and yeah. One of the things that we've been going over is this whole concept of talent and high top achievers. And one of the components of that is it's called deliberate practice. I'm sure you've heard of deliberate practice.
Yes.
Deliberate practice in the sense that whenever you are trying to attain mastery of a subject, it can be something more cerebral or something more physical. Whenever you are, deliberate practice is not just, you know how people say practice is perfect.
Right.
It's
but be
perfect,
thoughtful.
Perfect yeah. practice. And it's specifically going outside of what you find is attainable or what is your range. If you just go a little bit outside of that and you get in that uncomfortable zone where, let's say, if you can lift up 50 pounds, you try 60.
Okay.
That is when deliberate practice actually kicks in. And how does this relate to charity? I feel like when someone finds themselves, like you say, down and out or whatever the case might be, even stretching, you know, if you're going to do something, let's say I've seen organizations that do toy giveaways during the holidays.
Right.
If they add a component of some sort of merit or some sort of meritocracy where, you know, the moms, if they do X, Y, and Z community service hours, instead of getting, you know, $500 worth of toys, they get $750. Just
right.
A little bit of contribution that they have to include and they have to put in. It's enormous. It's amazing. You know, just the stretch. You say, well, I can't afford, you know, $25 a month, but the way the human brains work is when you figure that you have, like, you're poor, but you have to come up with that money, you
right.
figure out a way to do it. Have you
when you're making, right. What, absolutely. When you're making the investment. So that's in large part a philosophy behind the program. And we're bringing, we're trying to actually bring training into the local communities. So that is in response to an ability to travel, an ability to find childcare. So it's no excuses. We're bringing it in. You have the opportunity to come and be trained in various certifications and technical skills and get a job. There will also be assistance to find jobs. And, you know, we need that in our community. Our business community is crying for that. We really need a lot of those types of jobs. So this is going to be a perfect complement, we think, and we're very excited about it.
Yeah, I definitely think that's very critical. Now, yeah. You mentioned leadership, and that is an area that I've dedicated my life in studying. So I have a question for you.
Okay.
Top three leadership books that have impacted you personally.
So I would have to say there is, I'm trying to remember the name of this book. It is about, I know that it was about, I am terrible at the names of books. Okay, so I'm going to give you one that I recently read.
Okay.
And that is one that is, I'm trying to remember the name. I'll tell you what the book is about because
yes,
that's
what. That's fine.
And what it's about is, leadership through advocacy.
Okay.
And it really was compelling to me because it talked about how advocacy can move a group into a different level of entitlement, a different level of opportunity because of one individual advocating on behalf of that group, right? And it actually was through the NAACP. If you recall, in the 30s, 40s, 50s, we had a number of civil rights cases. And so the devil in the Grove, I knew as I was speaking through it, to me. Thank you for your patience.
Yes, yes.
But yes, it was all about, you know, legal minds advocating on behalf of others. Think about all the barriers that were the separate but equal doctrine was absolutely obliterated. We got integration of schools and all of those things, again, because of legal advocacy. And I do believe that was leadership. That was a very deliberate effort and movement to identify situations where they could use the legal system to make those changes. So that is one that really stands out for me.
Yeah, and I was reading a quote the other day. It said, the fundamental reason for leadership is creating more leaders. And it's all about replacing ourselves, right? And bringing up that up and coming generation. And I think of so many that have invested in me and have seen that leadership ability in me when I was younger. Name maybe two or three people maybe in your career, like it can be someone that has an official title of leadership, but I'm under the belief that not everyone that has a title of a leader is a leader, and not all leaders have titles. For example, you can have, like, it could be a grandparent or an aunt or somebody.
Right.
And they're influential, but they don't necessarily have a title. Who are maybe a couple of people that have invested in you could be someone professionally or personally that have kind of cultivated that leadership spirit in you.
Okay. So before I do that, I'm going to share a second book that I remembered. And it was a book on Zappos, about Zappos, that company. Yes. And it was a theory of leadership through keeping your employees happy.
Okay.
I'm a big believer in, you know, filling the cup, you know, really supporting employees or your team. You don't only inspire them with your words, but you really need to kind of lift them up. And that was the kind of the biggest takeaway from that book. It was really about how Zappos has a completely unique model. And that is that they try to keep their employees happy.
And how do they do that? How do they do that?
So they do that by listening to what the employees need, very flexible with time, provide lots of incentives that are often fun. So these are the kinds of things that really make a difference in people's lives.
Yes, and you said a very critical word that's adding to the discourse, and that word is fun. And,
yes.
And because I work in the crossworks of leadership and management, and then also entertainment and sports, and I like to study that dynamic between how management and leadership, how does it relate to sports and entertainment? And what I found is when you're having fun, there's something that happens in the brain. There's something that kicks in the brain, and it does something. It, first of all, it gives you a little bit of a longevity in what you're doing. And it also opens up different parts of your brain in terms of creativity.
Right.
Because if you notice, as you know, as human, as a species, we had to survive in the sense that whenever we felt resistance or pain, that meant that probably something really bad was going to happen, or we were probably going to die. So by nature, we try to avert pain. But if you're generally having fun, like let's say you're out with your friends, or you're doing an activity, you're playing chess, something that you enjoy, you try to prolong that activity and you try to create different things. So how is fun and, you know, and merriment and excitement, how do you implement that into your professional career?
So I absolutely try to engage my team, and we do a lot of celebrations. One of the largest projects that FPL does, my employer, Florida Power and Light Company, yes, which is our local utility, has a Power to Care program, which is all about a volunteer, bringing in volunteers all over the country, to all over the county and all over the state where we serve, to give back in lots of different opportunities. And we really try to make it fun, right?
Yes.
We engage those employees, and really, and anytime we sell, we do something that we consider a success, we try to celebrate that together. We celebrate each other's work anniversaries. We celebrate each other's birthdays. We really try to think about the important times in our co-workers' lives and make sure that matters. Okay. So, and one of the things that you asked me about leaders who have inspired me. So one of them is a leader in at FPL in our company that leads the economic development and also the external affairs business unit. And that unit is really the one that where community affairs sits and economic development sits. And I think the philosophy, that business unit has the highest engagement rating in the company. And it's in large part due to a leader who really supports the team, really shows the team that they are valued, and really lifts that team up. Also provides a lot of information to the team.
Okay.
So we feel, you know, the team feels that they know what's going on with the company, that they're part of the effort to get the company's initiatives moving forward. And also willing to celebrate those times with those employees. So that was kind of very much akin to my leadership style, and it's something that I really admire. And I have to say, I've borrowed a few things from. My mother, my mother is a second. And for what I learned from her was kindness. And
you're definitely a kind person. And that's something it can't be contrived. People see that in your eyes. They see that in your smile. You're a very gentle, kind, amazing, vivacious human being, you know?
Thank you. That's very generous. So, but I do believe that being kind, which is often seen as a weakness, is actually a strength, because it is the ability to, as you say, be gentle and thoughtful for people. I cannot tell you on how many occasions where I've given someone a genuine compliment, what a nice tie you have on today. That's absolutely lifted them. And I do that with strangers, and I get comments back, you know, I really appreciate that. I was having a down day.
Wow.
It's the simplicity of just being kind to others, and it takes little effort, but just a genuine caring. And I think people, when you're leading, people feel that, right?
Yes.
I think they're more responsive, they're more willing to go above and beyond if you show kindness.
Yes, yes, wow. And you talked about leadership, and one of the things that I found fascinating is you talked about this this individual that leads the Community External Affairs Unit.
Yes.
And you shared something that a lot of leaders may not know about or may not practice. And you said they share critical information. And that's very important. That's very important. One of my mentors, Dr. Ken Blanchard, who wrote The 1 Minute Manager, he tells me that on a quarterly basis, they share their entire financials with their staff. They don't hold anything back. And he says this accomplishes a few things. Number one, it lets them know, hey, what's going on with the company. It gives
yes.
them a sense of ownership. If there's an area of weakness, the team generally comes up with constructive, critical, you know, responses and solutions, because it's a very solutions-based company. And they kind of know, listen, if the company doesn't do well, then that means your position might be in danger. So there's a symbiotic relationship between the information being shared in a pertinent way. And I'm not saying, hey, go ahead and share what, you know, director's salaries are. I'm not saying anything like that, but genuine numbers of what, you know, what's going on in the business ledger, and sharing that those sorts of informations. And how have you found that sort of thing impacted your company in terms of FPL?
Well, I don't think you could have stated it any better. I mean, really, it provides the why. Why am I doing what I'm doing, right? And when I understand that, I can make decisions based around that. And it drives me. I understand we're all in this together. This is a team, and that's relative, whether it's a small team or the entire enterprise, we're all moving with, you know, toward the same goals.
Exactly.
So I think it really, as you, symbiosis was your term, I think that's perfect.
Yes, that's great. We talked about your books, we talked about your leadership. Now I want to talk about, when it comes to your legacy, I know that's a very heady type of concept. My philosophy is what Stephen Covey always said. He said you always start with the end in mind, right?
Yeah.
So I start my life at my funeral, right? And I look at all of my my loved ones. I look at all of my I look at all my loved ones, everyone that has impacted me, and I think of them at my funeral, and I think about what they say about me. And then I also ask myself today, am I being that person they can say all these wonderful things about today? How am I investing in people? How am I keeping in touch with the people that matter the most to me, you know? So if you think about your legacy, what is it that you want your legacy to be?
My legacy would be that those who I have come into contact with, either through work or friendships, feel that they have been touched by me in some way. I say that because from your perspective, you mentioned starting at the end with the end in mind. I don't want to live life with regret and leave here not sharing how I feel about people, how the value I find that people bring to me, or to, you know, the efforts that they do. And so I talk about that a lot. I share that with them. And I think I'm hoping that when they think of me, they think of something positive that I reminded them about themselves. And that I feel that they, in their way, at the time we were together, made an impact in some way.
Wow, wow. You know, someone once said, people don't know how much, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And one of the themes, if I were to pick a theme of your life, is I would say caring about the community is one. In addition to caring, is there's a deep, the word is like a, it's like a paideia. It's like a deep spiritual, hey, I care, but it's a care that's connected with action. There's an activism. There's an engagement factor in that, because, you know, they say the road to hell is paved with good intentions, right? Everyone has good intentions, you know, and they have this good intention to do this or start this initiative. Why do you think it's that you're so actionable? Where do you get that initiative from? It's like, because you do a lot of great things. A lot of people want to do a lot of great things, but you actually get on the boards, plan it, execute it, sign, seal, deliver. Where does that drive come from?
You know, my dad asked me that question a few times. I'm not sure where it comes from other than I want to get things done, right? So oftentimes, I think that may in fact be what it is. A desire to get things done, right? So if you don't start it, if you don't get moving on it, it's not going to get done. And I think back to the first time I took a leadership role. It was for that very reason, right? We had a task, but nobody was kind of taking the lead. And, you know, we're kind of not really moving the needle forward. And I said, well, why don't we try this? And I kind of outlined a plan. It wasn't the perfect plan, but it was something that moved the needle forward, right? And so I think that is in large part the driver, just a yearning for results, a yearning for, you know, making the impact, and to do that action is necessary.
Yeah, I love that. You said just moving that needle forward. And Emerson used to say, when his advice to writers, and they would say, I get this thing called writer's block. I just look and the paper or the computer screen is empty. He said, sometimes as a writer, you just got to do the next best thing.
Yeah.
Next best thing, you know? So your activism, your community drive, your passion, what is something about you that if people found out, they'd be surprised? Like, I've talked to several people, and then I find out that they like windsurfing, or they have a side hobby, they do whatever. Like, what is something that you do maybe in your pastime that if people found out, they'd be like, oh my goodness, I never knew she had that skill. I never knew she had that talent. What is something like that is completely different from law, completely different from your community work? It's just something that you just find amusing doing, you know?
Yeah. So two things come to mind. The first is I have a complete passion for fashion, right?
I see that.
I would like to think that people would think so by seeing how I dress, but I really do. So really into the fashion magazines. I will spend a lot of time looking at, you know, where fashion is going. I'm interested in the history of fashion. Just love fashion, right?
I have a passion for fashion too. In fact,
yes.
My favorite designer.
See, I could tell though.
Yes, yes. One of my favorite designers is Coco Chanel.
And oh my goodness!
And she had
my
a quote.
Heroine.
Let me tell you, she had a quote. She said, and I got this tattooed on my brain, so to speak. She said, "Fashion is instant language." Isn't that profound?
It is.
She said, fashion is instant language. You might not know what language that person is. You might not even know who that person is. But you see their fashion, voila. It just communicates an infinite amount about that person. So tell me about your fashion fetish.
My fashion fetish is probably accessories, jewelry.
Okay.
Probably, yes.
Okay.
Yes. I tend to be a simpler, but I love the power of an accessory.
Who's your favorite designer?
Chanel.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, without hesitation.
Wow.
It's lovely that we have that in common.
Yes.
She's a remarkable, remarkable woman, way ahead of her time, and has transcended time.
Her sensibilities is very feminine, very classy, has a sensibility of quaint, but classic, and just outright, I'll knock you out just by how I look. You just like, just bring in the benediction at that point, you know?
Very much so.
Are you a religious person or not really?
I am, deeply.
Okay, mm-hmm. Deeply. Okay, what brand or spirituality do you subscribe to?
I am Christian.
Awesome.
Yes, of the Baptist.
Okay. Yeah, that's great.
I very much find it a huge sustaining force, and I'm grateful always for all that I have because of him.
Yes, I find that growing up, you know, I've learned so much from, you know, I've had the opportunity to travel to more than 50 countries, and it never ceased to amaze me just how faith and belief, how it centers people. It keeps them so grounded. And for my life, you know, and my personal life, it has gotten me through a lot of difficult times in my life, whether it be the loss of a friend or a loved one. And even in my career, I see his hands all over it, you know? And I'm a big believer is that we're not just physical beings having a spiritual experience. We're actually spiritual beings having a physical reality. So I practice like the law.
Got a lot of great quotes I'm going to use, but I will give you credit for them. Yeah. So, you know, exactly to what you said, my father growing up always said to me that everyone, no matter who it is, has at least one positive thing. And there are those who challenge you to believe that. Mm. But he always said, look for it, right? And so I also believe that. But the thing that this is relevant because I also believe that of other religions. Because I have found that so many other religions have so many beautiful aspects. And so I can appreciate that, to your point, it brings people serenity, regardless of what their chosen or selected belief is.
And I love what Voltaire, the great French philosopher, said. He said that I may disagree with your belief or your perspective or of your philosophy, but he said I would fight to the death for your right to have your belief. And that's just how I've always lived my life with people that have different views than me. I say, listen, I may not subscribe to that, but I will die over you having your right to believe what you believe.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
So that's something that I hold in very high regard. And looking at, you know, there's been a lot of things in society that have happened when you think of, you know, patriarchy and women, this country, having the right to vote as late as, you know, 1921. I mean, that's a travesty. That's a tragedy. Women have always been marginalized. Women have always been stigmatized in this society. As a woman in leadership, how have you overcome that barrier and chauvinism and all the things that my gender have tried to do that is negative?
So I'm going to transition from something you said to answer that question. You talked about, you know, fighting for someone else's right to have a different belief. And that comes from a profound and deep respect for your fellow human beings, their rights and their beliefs.
Exactly.
I think if you interact with people showing that you respect them, it commands respect. And I believe very, very much that that is what has allowed me to be as successful as I have been in dealing with people. And when you deal with people in that way, you're embraced and you're respected, and then you can move forward. Then you don't have to deal with all the other issues that, you know, come to the fore. So I would have to say that just being respectful of people and working with them and reminding them that I'm here on your team. You know, I'm not working against you. I'm here to support this initiative. This is not a personal, this is not about you. This is not about me. This is about us working together for a common goal.
Yes, I love that. I love that. I love that. As they say, teamwork makes the dream work, right?
Yes. That's all right. So I use that before. I've used that before.
Yes, 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 yes. Yeah. And so with young leaders, what would be your message to young leaders, specifically to young people aspiring for leadership? What would you, if you had a sit down with a young person and they said, hey, you know, Miss Juliet, I just really want to get into leadership. Yeah. What do you recommend me do? What would be my first step? Now, this could be someone in their first year of college or their last year in high school. What would you say to that individual?
I believe that when you make your first entree into leadership, it should be to do something that you have a strong belief in or are passionate about. Because I think that that's the spark that starts the fire, right? So my suggestion always is to, what is it that you are excited about? What gets you excited? And whatever that is, try to find a volunteer opportunity in that area. And if there is no such thing, then, you know, let's think about how we can create that, right? So that would be always the first step. And then I say, once you have decided where you're going to invest your time, talent, and treasure, when you get there, you've got to, you know, work hard and go for it, contribute. You know, this is not about you going and sitting down at a table and, you know, just raising your hand here and there. I believe in rolling sleeves up. So even though, for instance, I talked to you about sharing boards, I also am a volunteer, you know, with t-shirts, shoveling dirt to make sure that a yard is, you know, a yard around a community building is clear. We build community gardens and, you know, vegetables. I mean, so that's just an example of it. Really, it doesn't matter what level you are exactly. You need to roll up your sleeves and work. And whether that's physical or whether that's contributing on an intellectual or mental level, you do the best you can when you first engage. Wow. And people will appreciate that and you will be embraced. So that's how I always start. And it's the way I started, and it really made a difference for me, and I've seen it make a difference for others. So that would be the advice I would give.
Wow, that is very, very profound, very, very sound. And I also think about like challenges, and we all go through them. And I feel like the challenges that we go through in our careers, in our lives, I feel like in some ways it reminds us just how human we are and the frailty of life, you know. I remember being in Haiti and after the earthquake, and we were there. I had assembled a team of physicians, and we flew over there. And we were there like days after the quake, which we probably shouldn't have been over there because it was very dangerous. They were still having tremors and everything, you know.
Wow.
And I remember just, they had a aftershock. The place where we were, the makeshift hospital that we were at, it almost collapsed with us inside, including the physicians and patients. We had to take everyone out. And I just, at that point, I just started thinking to myself, like, I could have literally died in that makeshift hospital.
Yeah.
Like, and it was so quick. It was within seconds. Like, within seconds. Like, it would have been almost like, let's say, 2 seconds, and then we would have all perished. And that just showed me the fragility of life, just the, like, as accomplished and as great as all the things that we get a chance to do, and we're very blessed and privileged. But it could have all been over in a second.
Yes.
You know, and so that, I think about things like that, and it keeps me grounded, just how fragile life is and the challenges that I've gone through. What are some challenges, perhaps, or tell me about a challenge that was so difficult, so hard, but somehow, some way, you were able to muster the strength, muster the gusto to overcome that insurmountable mountain. And maybe even people in your own family didn't think you were gonna be able to do it. But you're over that hump, you're over that hill. And now it's a story in the past, right? It's not, you know, so tell me about a major challenge or tragedy you had to overcome.
Well, first of all, thank you for doing that with Haiti. I think it's so important that we, as again, take action, and the fact that you participated in that is tremendous. And it's a testament to who you are. And I just want to say thank you for that.
Well, thank you.
So my challenge, I think the one that I think of first and foremost, was my first job as a lawyer. And I had a supervising lawyer who I ended up learning was racist and sexist.
Oh my God.
And generally just not a nice.
That's a double
that's
even.
That's not problem. Enough. Yes. So let's say it was already a challenge for me just being myself. And I had to deal with a lot of very negative behavior, very demeaning comment. And I'll share one with you in particular that is most memorable. At my first year review, I was handed my review and I'm looking at it. And he leans across the table and slows the pace of his speech and says, "I am speaking slowly to you so that you can understand what I am saying, because you speak and write at the level of a third grader. Fortunately, my mama and papa raised me differently. And I thought, something is wrong.
Sorry that you had to go through that. Wow.
I think that pretty much sums up the experience I had. The stories are abundant about how difficult he made it for me there. But coming through that, and on the other side of that, first of all, finding ways to get around him for others to see my value, you know, standing up to that and telling him that I think you expressly that I thought he was incorrect about that evaluation, really taught me to be strong and not to have another person's opinion shape who I am.
Preach it, girl.
And
preach
so,
it.
I have to thank him now. At the time, it did not seem that way, but I have to thank him now because there is nothing anyone can say to me that's going to make me feel bad about myself.
I always say you got to thank your haters because they are your elevators. They elevate you. They take you to the penthouse suite, baby. I've had a share of haters in my life too. And I think one of the profound things that you said is the profundity of your speech is amazing. But one of the things you said was, do not let someone else's opinion define you. And I feel like, and especially with social media and all these new sorts of ways, people live off of the comments of others. And
right.
It can make, kids are committing suicide based on a like or a dislike or a comment of someone that can be, a 500-pound man just masquerading as someone else on the other side of the world. You never know who is on the other side of the tweets and everything. And so it's so important that you control your own narrative. Someone's opinion of you don't have to be a reality. But that takes a lot of personal constitution, fortitude, intestinal fortitude to say, you know what? Your opinion don't count. There's only two opinions that counts. Mine's and my mama. And if my mama tripping, hers don't count either.
On the other hand, one of the things I shared that with my son, right, as he was growing up, as one of the stories to kind of help him be prepared if that were ever to happen. And I do say, though, that there were some things buried very deep down in that evaluation that were actually thoughtful and helpful. So, you have to always listen because, you don't want to have a blind spot for your weaknesses, right? Or the opportunities for you to grow. So I also say that to filter, right? So I was able to filter the negative overlay, but I was also able to take something, I think it was back to my father's thing.
Wow.
There's always something positive about look for. Yeah. And I found the two things in that report that were helpful for me.
Wow, so that speaks of your character. Now I'm reaching for something here. Let me see if I can find it. Okay. So I don't know if you can see it. Do you see it?
Oh, yes, I do.
Yes, I'm sure you like these a lot. So this is a $100 bill, right?
I have to say, I appreciate that.
Yeah,
I appreciate $100.
And Benjamin Franklin was one of the great founders here. But I always, when I'm talking to young people, I always show them this. And they get so excited. Oh, can I have it? Can I have it?
What is?
I always say, you know what? This $100 bill, and I usually take it and I crumple it up. And I usually throw it on the floor and step on it. I said, and then I uncrumple it. And I said, what's the value of this $100 bill? They said, it's still $100. It's still $100. And I say, well, what if I spit on it? What's the value of it? It's still $100. It's still $100. I said, what if I just take it and rub it in mud? It said, it's still $100. It's still $100. And I said, no matter what happens to this $100 bill, no matter what anyone says about this $100 bill,
no
matter what someone's opinion of this $100 bill, it does not change its value. I say to everyone listening, I said, no matter what people say about you, no matter what your teachers say about you, it doesn't change your value. One of the things that I learned coming up was servant leadership.
Yes.
My parents taught me that there's no job above me or beneath me.
Right.
So whether I'm sweeping, I have to do it like MLK.
Yes, I know that.
Yeah, he said, whether you are a street sweeper, he said, do it like Picasso painted canvases.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites.
Yeah, no job is beneath you, no job is below you, but you shouldn't stereotype people, number one. In addition to that, you should never, no matter if the person is cleaning your clothes or cleaning your house or whatever services they're providing for you, you should not treat them in a disparaging manner. You shouldn't treat them like you are all of a sudden better than they are. You know, you shouldn't do that. You should treat everyone as though they were the President of the United States or Mother Teresa or someone that you hold in very high regard or high respect, you know? And that's just how I was raised, you know, from the onset, you know?
Absolutely.
Well, yep.
Well, good for you. And again, that's very generous.
Exactly. We're going to end off by doing a game of rapid succession, okay?
Okay.
So I'll ask you a series of questions and you have to answer it with one word.
Okay.
All right. So favorite color?
Green.
Favorite place to vacation?
San Francisco.
Wow. That's pretty interesting. Which part of San Francisco?
All of it. Okay. I particularly like its closeness to Napa.
Okay. So favorite wine?
I like Oakland too.
Okay.
All of it.
Favorite basketball team?
I have to say the Heat.
Okay. All right. Favorite football team?
I have to say the Dolphins, but that's killing me right now.
Oh my goodness. Wait till next year.
I believe, if you live here, you gotta support your team.
Exactly. Okay. Favorite book of all time?
Oh, the Bible.
Okay. Favorite book in the Bible?
I would have to say Genesis.
Wow.
The beginning.
Okay.
Then Proverbs.
Okay.
Proverbs has so many beautiful verses.
Especially for an attorney, a lot of the wisdom verses, right?
Yes, a lot of the wisdom verses.
Yep. Best?
Do you know another one I love? Do you know The Giving Tree by Silverstein?
Tell me about The Giving Tree.
It's really a children's book,
okay.
But I give it as gifts to adults. The Giving Tree is about, and it's predominantly pictorial.
Okay.
But the idea of it is that there's a tree that gives shade to a little child, and the tree provides wood for the for the child, and this tree has pretty much given of itself to this child, and the idea of the child then giving back at the end too. It's all about giving and what that taught the child, and it's a really wonderful book.
I'm going to definitely read that over the holidays for sure. Who's the author of that book?
It's Silverstein. I think it's Shel Silverstein, but it's okay. Silverstein's last name. Yeah.
Okay, that's going to be my holiday reading.
Yeah.
Favorite foods. Ooh.
Oh my gosh. I love everything ethnic, but starting with Jamaican.
Okay, so
curry goat.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Favorite restaurant.
My favorite restaurant is probably a Thai restaurant called Thai Time.
Okay, all right. So you're big into the spices.
I love the spices.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
It has been a plum pleasing pleasure and a privilege. You have brought so much joy to my listening ears, to my heart, and thank you so much. Mark Twain used to have a saying. He said, "The greatest gift that one can give is a portion of themselves." Thank you, Julia. Given a portion of yourself to me today.
Thank you. And I love that alliteration. Really good. It's really been a pleasure talking to you.
It's been my pleasure. And I'm sure that our listeners will be very, very much delighted. I think you're an amazing role model for young women and also young men and older men and just anybody that breathes. I think you're a great example of just a person that has taken their gifts, taken their God-given talents, and have said that, you know what, I'm going to make a contribution. The great Miles Monroe used to say that every single human being has one major contribution that they have to make to planet Earth. Woe is them if they don't make that contribution. And
yeah.
I think that you're making that contribution. You're living your best life now. And thank you for that, you know?
Thank you. And really, I appreciate this opportunity.
Thank you so much. Well, let's be in touch. I'll let you know when we post the interview, okay?
I look forward to it.
Blessings to you.
All right, you too. Bye now.
It has been a pleasure and a privilege. Please go to GibsonSylvester.com/podcast to find out more about this podcast and also to browse helpful resources that will help you in your personal and business life. Thank you very much.